I'm Richard Finneberg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 102 for the weekend starting Friday, 27 June 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at Plus Tech Central.
And on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about what was announced at Google's big I.O. developer conference.
We also chat about MTN and Pick and Pay pushing into the M-banking and M-commerce space. And we talk about the decision to review e-tolls.
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we need to pay the bills. Don't go away, we'll be back right after this.
Since getting high-speed satellite internet access out here, things have been happening at the Lodge. We've posted more pictures.
Yeah.
We've had more inquiries.
Yeah.
And we've had more guests.
Yeah. Yeah. See? Hi. Yeah. 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 We.
Yeah.
So, say yeah to YaClick internet access, wherever you are. YaClick, available from Vox Telecom and Atlantic. SMS your name to 48484 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it doing?
Good, good, thanks. Strange weather outside. It looks like it might rain in the middle of winter.
In the middle of winter, yeah. We're getting back to summer. Can't wait for a bit of heat.
It's been only 3 days since the shortest day of the year, so it'll be quite welcome a bit of warmth after June.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into the news. I think the only thing we need to start with this week is Google's big I.O. developer conference, something I certainly as an Android user look forward to every year. Although I must say I was a bit disappointed. I thought there wasn't a huge amount of news flow coming out of this year's event compared to previous years. But I know you were quite excited about what happened. What really grabbed your attention? What got you excited about this year's I.O.?
Yeah, like you said, I did think it was a good Google I.O. conference, simply because, I mean, they might not have announced anything tangible right now, but I think they alluded to a lot of technology, or they showcased a lot of technologies that will be launching by the end of the year. And that I find quite exciting. We could clearly see that they are tightening up their operating system. They were working on the design. They launched a new design language called Material Design.
And that's going to be across platforms. It's not just Android. It's the web.
Yes.
It's Chrome. So
Android L, which is going to be the new version of Android, based on the letter L, obviously.
And that's rumored to be called Lollipop.
Lollipop, that's it.
I hope it's not.
I think it could be Lemon Meringue. Who knows?
Yeah, that'd be better.
But, so the design language, what they've done is they've obviously built the new Android L platform to work very well on a tablet, on a phone, in a car with Android Auto that they announced, and Android TV, which is another thing they announced.
Having another go at TV.
Sorry?
Having another go at TV.
Another go at TV, yes. So the design language will be working across all devices. They're trying to make a tight integration, but, you know, if you pick up your Android phone and if you go to a tablet or if you use your Android TV, I think you'll get a much better experience, much cleaner experience throughout the ecosystem. And I'm quite excited to see how they will really implement this and what the final product will look like. But I do think it's a much better looking version of Android than what we've seen before.
It looks cleaned up. In some ways, I think I wouldn't go as far as to say that they've wholesale borrowed ideas from Apple. I do think that they have borrowed that cleaner design from the iOS 7 that was introduced in iOS 7. Yes. More of a flat design, more use of space. And I quite like it, I must say.
And if you look at what Apple announced at their developer conference about earlier this month, I think when we compare the two final products, we will see some similarities in terms of the flatter design. I think we are moving away from the graphic design style that makes the phone look very dated. So we'll see much cleaner lines, much smoother user interface. And I think there's definitely going to be a much better use of color within the operating system. I'm very excited. I could potentially move back to Android as a result of all of these.
You're an iPhone user at the moment. What about Android L is really appealing to you, apart from the design?
The fact that the operating system seems to be more mature now. The fact that my Android phone and my Android tablet will be working a lot better. I mean, up to now, if I look at my iPad compared to any other Android devices, I didn't really find the user experience to be all that appealing. Although, you know, what you can do with Android is obviously there's a lot more usable features or tweakable functions within Android. It's definitely aimed at the power user. I think what Android L is going to give consumers is that same feel that you get when you use an Apple product.
Yeah, yeah.
It just works. The operating system looks beautiful. And
well, are we going to get that, though? Or are we going to see the manufacturers, as have done in the past, put these ugly interfaces on top of them, like TouchWiz from Samsung, which is hideous? Yeah, are they actually going to allow this beautiful new design that Google's come up with to come get through onto those end-user devices? Or are we going to see Samsung and all the other manufacturers putting their hideous overlays on top of it?
It's a good question, but the way that they explain the how they're going to entrench this design language, because it's going to run into applications as well. Application developers are going to be able to make use of it. So I think we'll see some elements of a Samsung overlaying a skin, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a difference what we see in Android today. Mm. So with the new material design, I think the manufacturers will embrace it more than trying to replace it.
I hope so. I hope you're right, because we certainly haven't seen that in the past, but perhaps they will with a better design, a design cue from Google, and maybe even there's going to be pressure from customers for it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of customers now, I mean, I know if I start using a Samsung phone, it's very likely I'm going to get rid of TouchWiz within a month of buying the device, and put something much more akin to vanilla Android on top of it.
Definitely. I think they've seen this in the studies that they've done, and I think they're trying to address that with this. I mean, like I said, the design language is entrenched through so much of the operating system that third-party manufacturers will most likely embrace it and build their applications on top of the design language, as opposed to building the application on top of the Android operating system natively.
It's very interesting. I mean, it's clear that there's a two-horse race going on here between Apple and Google. With Microsoft bringing up the rear somewhere in the distance, and BlackBerry dying in the starting blocks. But I think it's really interesting to see where Apple and Google in particular are going here. And I think that Google is really pushing Android as the world's device, or the world's platform. They're pushing it down. You saw the new announcement, for example, of Android One, which is their attempt to get even lower down into that lower end of the market, low-cost devices. They're really, really pushing hard to get Android onto everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas Apple's strategy has been very different. We saw the introduction of the iPhone C, so-called lower-cost device last year. And I don't think it's done all that well from what I've been reading. And it's certainly not a cheap device either. So Apple's very much still playing in the high end of the market.
Mm-hmm.
They're by far the most profitable player in the mobile industry amongst the handset manufacturers, by far. The question is, who has the better strategy here? Has Google got the right strategy in pushing their device software down onto every possible platform they can? Let's remember that Google, although they own Motorola, isn't really a hardware manufacturer. Mm. Apple very much is in the hardware game. There's two very different strategies here. One is to get Android onto everything, and Apple's approach is, well, let's sell high margin devices to the premium end of the market.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll only know in a couple of years' time, maybe 3 or 5 years from now, which of these companies was more correct, and whether Apple's strategy of catering to a niche segment of the market, the high end of the market, was the right one or not, and whether Android's approach of becoming dominant, or really creating the Windows of the mobile environment, was more of the correct approach. I don't know what the answer is at this stage, whether Google is going to be a much bigger, more powerful company than Apple 5 years from now, or whether Apple is going to continue to dominate in the high end of the market.
I certainly think Android will be pushing that. I mean, they want to get onto every platform, and I think it is a very good strategy for them, and I think it's going to work out in the long run. If you look at what they're doing with the auto on the Android Auto side, and basically what they're giving you is a screen in a car, and you plug in your device, so whatever screen you have in your car turns into an Android platform. Those kind of innovations, I think, allows a platform to just organically go into various parts of the market.
Apple, of course, is doing that as well in the automotive industry. They've got their own in-car solution, which they've announced. I don't think it's available yet.
Yeah, but that is also a lot more restrictive in many
ways. Is it? Okay, I haven't looked at the Apple one in any real detail.
So with Android Auto, for example, I mean, you'll plug in your phone becomes the driving force. So whatever software, there's no Android software that you have to worry about in the car. It's all going to run off your handset. Your handset will pick up the car, and it'll adapt the display in your car to display what you want. And that those kind of things, if you look at the Google Watch as well, I mean, you know, you can debate whether we want watches, smart watches. But the fact that they're allowing a platform, an ecosystem for for manufacturers to build whatever they want on top of that, that's always a good strategy in my mind. But it's like two sides of a coin. You'll always have a company like Apple producing premium products, and you'll always have a company like Android that produces something for a much broader spectrum of users and manufacturers. We need both in a competitive market space, but I do think Android's strategy announced this year is going to work out very well for them in the future. I'm very excited about it.
I think we may be heading into the sort of same sort of space where we saw the PC industry get to, where Apple was a niche player with premium products that sold at a higher margin, the MacBook. And I think Google will become the Microsoft of the new era, where they own the mass platform, like Windows did, dominated the client server era of computing. I think Android is going to dominate the mobile / cloud era of computing that we're in now.
I agree.
But the big question is, where does this leave Microsoft?
Yeah, they have been remarkably quiet, and it's a little sad to see. But
well, I don't know if they've been so much as quiet. I mean, they're desperately trying to play catch up. They've got Windows Phone. They're innovating on their platform, and they're doing some really cool stuff. But they're not getting the traction. I think they've come to the market too late. They woke up too late.
Yeah, and let's be honest. Their phone strategy was atrocious from the beginning. A few years ago,
you talk about Windows Mobile.
I mean, Windows when they started with their first mobile platform. Obviously, we know how bad it was.
Although originally, when they brought out Windows, was it Windows CE or Windows? I forget what it was called in those early days. But iPack devices that Hewlett-Packard put out. Those with the stylus. Those were actually pretty cutting edge at the time. I mean, they were
cutting edge. But if you look at what they ultimately achieved with those things, I mean, they basically took a desktop operating system looking desktop operating That's system true. Type thing that on an iPad with a stylus that you had to use, and they didn't innovate the platform and say, here's a new type
Which
of
Steve
interface.
Jobs did with iPhone.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was a lot of problems with that platform, because I mean, you couldn't just plug it into your machine and have like.
I had one of those things. I hated using it with that stylus. It was like you were trying to hit the okay button and you would miss, and it was a really bad, poorly thought out design.
And there was no applications. Remember that? There was nothing like an app on a mobile platform. You had to install dedicated software that was designed for Windows mobile at the
People
time.
Would just basically use it to browse the web and check their email.
But I did. My first phone in that era was the iMate SP3.
Oh, I had one of those. I think I've still got it in a drawer somewhere.
It was a beautiful device. I loved it. Yeah. I mean, at the time, it was a candy bar design that was unlike anything else out there. But it was very limited if you look back.
It was cool. I think that was my first non-Nokia phone, actually. It was the iMate.
Yeah, that was and they did a big push in the country back then. And then when they moved to a few years later, when it was a chance for them to move to, you know, that new design, the new mobile operating system, they were just missing from the market. Android came out in the meantime. iPhone obviously upped its game, and they were 2 or 3 years behind. I think this is what we're seeing now. The fact that they didn't action these things quick enough. When I was looking at Nokia Windows was announcing some of the new features of Windows Phone 8.1 the other night. There's some nice new features, but again, is it too little too late? You know, it's a good platform now, and I can see why people like it. It's a beautiful looking operating system. But if I have to choose between an iPhone or an Android, iPhone, Android, and a Windows mobile device, I'll certainly choose iPhone or Android. I mean, it just makes a more logical choice, because you've got a platform that you can tap into.
I agree. I've tried to move to Windows Phone. I spent about a month and a half using the Nokia 1020, which is a beautiful phone. It's got a great camera. I could argue it's a little bit on the heavy side, but it's a really, really great piece of hardware. Like Nokia's always done. Nokia has been a great hardware company. But the Windows Phone let it down. It's just not mature enough. Whatever Microsoft and Nokia might argue, the app ecosystem is not quite there yet.
I was speaking to a developer at Mobile Monday on Monday, and he told me that most developers also, they totally ignore the platform simply because there's no user base to tap into. I mean, how much money do you spend on an application or time to develop that application for a mobile platform, for Windows Mobile, or Windows Phone at least, but there's no users, no people installing the application, and that kind of kills it.
It's kind of like where, it's actually quite ironic, because Microsoft Mobile is kind of like where the open source and Linux guys were in the desktop market. Yes. They couldn't attract the app developers because Windows owned 95% of the market, so all the developers were going to Windows, and very few people were developing for Linux. We're kind of in a situation now where everyone's developing for Android and iOS, and they're ignoring Windows Phone because it's got such a small user base.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at what they're doing with tablets too, I mean, we were expecting from Windows Phone or Windows Mobile Platform a tablet device that gives you the power of a PC, so you can plug in a USB port, copy over your applications, or install, a Windows-based version of Adobe Suite, for example.
But yeah,
that never materialized as well. I think the idea of a Windows platform, you know, if you think about that, we're always going to think back of the PC architecture.
Yeah,
and that's potentially what could be killing it, because it's not able to get to that point where it produces a mobile ecosystem that's as powerful as a desktop machine, because you want that interoperability.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. But let's come back to the I/O. We get a bit sidetracked with other things. The I/O conference for me, it was actually quite more interesting for me, I think, what was missing from it. Why didn't they not talk about Google Glass? It wasn't mentioned once during the 3-hour keynote. This was the thing that a year or two ago they were shouting from the rooftops about. They were jumping out of airplanes and into the Moscone Center in San Francisco because this was the next big revolution. Instead, they focused on Google Wear and smartwatches, but there was no mention of gear at all. I wonder if they're putting it on the back burner. Perhaps they've realized that, well, actually, guys don't want to walk around in the streets with these big nerdy glasses.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to be wearing one of those. It's a great novel idea. It was fun to look at and experiment with when it was launched.
Mm.
But potentially what Google could be doing is the Google Glass could have been a precursor to Google Wear and the Google Watch platform. Because if you think of what you can do, I mean, yes, when you put the Google Glass on, you've got that screen that's really on the top right-hand side of your face to always tap into. But I don't necessarily think that is what consumers would want. I mean, a watch is far more versatile in that, you know, it's something that's concealed. It's something that we've been wearing for, you know, many decades. And when you lift up your wrist, you've got all that information available to you. Mm-hmm. So whether you're at the airport, you know, it'll show up your flight details without you having to wear something on your face. I think that, and also we've seen a lot of issues with people walking into public places with Google Glass on.
Mm.
People don't want that people don't like that idea of potentially being filmed.
Yes.
Where a watch, even though it's got a camera in, the physical action you do of recording something is more obvious, like holding up a camera to your face. People know what your intentions are.
Yeah.
So I predict that we could be seeing something like Google Glass integrated into Google Wear platform that gives you a lot of options. So whether it's a watch, whether it's still the Google Glass, but it's not going to be the centerpiece, the center focus of the platform.
Mm. The other thing that was missing from I/O this week was Larry Page.
Mm,
where was he? Question is, has his that problem he has with his voice rematerialized, or did he feel that Google simply wasn't making big enough announcements this week to warrant him being there?
Yeah, or he just didn't. I think developer platform was something he would want to. Yeah, but maybe it was his voice.
It could have been.
I haven't seen any reports of rumors around it.
I haven't seen anything either. But I must say, I was a bit. I think there was probably quite a bit of substance there, but I suppose from the show business side of things, it was a bit dull this year. They weren't jumping out of aeroplanes and that sort of thing. And
I think that
iconic image that came out of last year's I/O with Larry Page on stage with the Google Earth Earth image rotating behind him on stage. There were no theatrics like that, which I think people are quite keen to see.
Yeah, looking forward to. Mm. Look, they did say that most of the technologies are going to be available towards the end of this year. So we potentially could see another event that they'll do a bit more fanfare around.
Yeah. So before the end of the year, Android Lollipop. Let's move on then, Richard. Press conference I went to, I think it was on Monday now, if I'm not mistaken, or it could have been Tuesday, in Soweto, and that was the launch by MTN and Pick n Pay of a very interesting new mBanking, mobile banking and mobile commerce platform. I really didn't know what I was getting in for, and I think I had an idea that they were just going to announce this new Visa debit card that they'd launched or announced on Monday, and I wasn't expecting much more, but it was actually a really interesting event, and the stuff they're doing is really, really cool. I've written my column about it this Sunday, so have a look at that and give my views on what they've done here. But I think it's really interesting. It's basically a free banking platform aimed at the unbanked in South Africa, and the way they've implemented it is very, very, very clever. First of all, you don't have to be an MTN Money customer to use it. You don't have to be an MTN subscriber to use it. You can sign up to the MTN Money platform if you're a Vodacom, Telkom, or Cell C. Although you don't get all the benefits that accrue if you're with the MTN platform through Pick n Pay. The other interesting thing they're doing is they're launching a co-branded SIM card. You get one of these cards, and it entitles you to all sorts of free services on this on the M-Commerce platform, on the MTN Money platform. So you can draw and deposit cash at tills. So effectively, the cashier becomes a teller. Mm. You can if you want it, you pay 29 Rand and you get a Visa branded debit card that That's has no additional feature. Fees, just 29 Rand once off, and you can use that to purchase goods at any retailer basically that has a point of sale, which is really cool. And in fact, I signed up for one in 2 minutes at the launch. You simply dial, I think it's star, I'm going to get this wrong now, but I think it's star 120 star 668 hash. It's either 668 or 688 hash. I forget which it is, but if you look it up online, you'll find it. And you go through this process and you sign up for a mobile money account, and literally you go through the press through a USSD menu system and you've got a bank account in 2 minutes. You don't even have to go through a Rika process, because there's this account called a GN6 account FICA, the Financial Intelligence Services Act, which you have to go through to open a bank account. But there's this thing called GN6. It's some sort of thing in the FICA Act that allows for exemptions. And you can have up to 25,000 Rand in one of these accounts and do 1,000 Rands worth of transactions a day without having to bring in your FICA documents. If you want to FICA the card and you want to do more with it, or the mobile money account, you can simply bring in your FICA documents, your proof of residence and your ID, and their banking partner, Bank of Athens, through their subsidiary, their division Time, has rolled out over 500 of these machines, which are basically vertical scanners. They've put into all the Boxer and MTN stores countrywide. I think there are about 550 or 560 of them. You scan your documents on this thing. It looks like a cell phone on top. And so it basically takes a photo of your documents and stores them. That's the FICA process. So you don't have to go into a bank. You can open Zunaid Babulia, the CEO of MTN South Africa, said at the launch, this is the first time in South Africa where you can open a bank account without having to go into a bank branch. Mm. In fact, there's no bank involved except for Bank of Athens providing the license to do this. And it's free banking if you're an MTN customer, and cheap banking if you're with one of the other networks. I think it's really cool, and I think this is the biggest, smartest push we've seen into M-banking and M-commerce in this country so far. Of course, we've got Vodacom planning to relaunch M-Pesa soon in South Africa. It's been a bit of a failure for them. It's done incredibly well in Kenya and Tanzania, but it could happen any week now. They're going to announce the relaunch of M-Pesa, and I'm sure that they're going to look at working with retail partners and similar as well. Yeah. Whether Vodacom smart is the right word, but forward-thinking enough to open up their M-Pesa platform to other network operators remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. They should. I don't think they will.
Yeah, look, I think either way, we're in for an exciting time within the banking side of things, you know, the disruption
absolutely.
Of the banking services.
I think this is a real... I think this MTN Vodacom... Sorry, this MTN Pick and Pay thing is a real challenge, direct challenge to the big banks.
Yes.
Which haven't been all that successful. They have had some successes in getting the unbanked online through these cheap Mzansi accounts, but... There's still millions of people in South Africa who don't have access to the formal banking system.
I think
This could change it.
And the mobile operators are probably in a better position to be able to attract those users than a bank would be.
Sure, there are certainly many more mobile users in this country than there are banking clients.
And they're also much more inclined to switch operators, I think.
Yeah.
Or they have two or three SIM cards that they use. I think it's very exciting and a very good idea. And like you said, it's worth signing up for.
It's smart for Pick and Pay as well. It gets people into their stores.
Mm.
You know, okay, well, I need to get some cash or I need to deposit some cash. Go to Pick and Pay. Okay, well, I'll buy my bread and milk here too.
It's probably a lot more safer too if you've been looking at some of the incidents where people have been followed from banks if they withdraw large amounts of money. I mean, if you can do that, I'm not saying you
can be able to. It gets a lot of cash out of the system too, because at the point of sale, you don't need cash. You don't even need this debit card. You can just use your phone. You get to the point of sale, you dial star 120 star 1 number.
Mm.
At the point of sale, they generate something called a Y code.
Mm.
And the cashier simply punches his Y code into the till, and you've paid. It comes off your mobile money account.
Brilliant.
No cash involved. And employers can deposit cash into these accounts as well, which is very important.
Yeah.
So you can have your salary paid into it.
That, I think, is a big
key
part of it.
That's key. So it's not just a transactional account. It's actually a proper banking account.
Yeah, if you've got a number associated with it, anybody can deposit money into it. It means you can use it like a real bank account. Mm. Very exciting things, and I look forward to seeing what the next step in this evolution is.
Yeah. Anyway, I said we said at the beginning of the show that we're going to talk about e-tolls this week, but actually we're not, because I want to talk about something else, and we are running out of time, and I want to talk about the new IMAX theater in Pretoria, which I went to this week. Have you been to an IMAX theater before?
Yeah, many years ago. I watched a documentary called Dolphins in Cape Town, V&A Waterfront, back in 2001, I think it was.
And your experience?
Spectacular experience. Yeah. I mean, the screen is amazing. You know, you're sitting there, you're totally immersed in what it gives you, and the quality of the footage is generally... I mean, back then it was groundbreaking. It wasn't 4K, but it was it was those dedicated IMAX cameras that they used to shoot with.
I went to see Transformers for my sins at this new Stereokinico IMAX at the Grove Shopping Centre. I don't know if you've been to the Grove. It seems it looks like a new centre. I think it may have just been built. It's huge.
Well, to accommodate the IMAX centre, maybe.
The IMAX screen, yeah. But massive shopping centre out. I couldn't believe it. Linwood Road in Pretoria. If you head out on the old Petersburg Highway, Polokwane Highway. It's the last off-ramp before you get to the N4. It's past Menlyn. You turn off there, turn right over the highway and head into the eastern suburbs of Pretoria. I've never seen so many shopping centres in my life. Every second block is this massive shopping centre. It's like, what do they do in Pretoria? Just shop all the time. I suppose they spend all our tax dollars on the government bureaucrats.
That's the place to do it.
Grove Shopping Centre. This absolutely massive centre. It looks the size of Johannesburg's Cresta Centre.
Sure.
Anyway, we went there to watch Transformers, which I must say is the most utterly appalling movie. Almost zero storyline aimed at teenage boys, I think.
Well, it's robots fighting.
True. But the special effects are absolutely stunning, and I guess that's why people go. It's what it's about. And I'm not sure what the resolution of the screen was, whether it was 2K or 4K or some other resolution. It looked like a 4K screen viewing to me.
It
looked
very good. Yeah. Upper regions of that.
And massive screen, and the 3D effects. I was sitting about, I'd say, two thirds of the way back in the cinema, and in the theater, and. When I put the 3D glasses on and the show started, it felt like the action was right in front of me. It was quite remarkable. It was with some of the 3D effects, which obviously in a movie like that have been pushed to the maximum.
Yes.
You had elements of the screen right in front of your nose as the movie was playing, and it was quite disconcerting at times, because I mean, they've got robots scrambling up buildings in Hong Kong and camera angles flying down the sides of buildings and that sort of thing. I think sitting right up in the front row could be quite nauseating. But quite a spectacular experience, and I would highly recommend perhaps give Transformers a skip unless you want to sit through 3 hours of
robots fighting.
You know, wait for something better to come along, but if you want to just go and spend 3 hours looking at amazing graphics, then if that's your thing, then I highly recommend it, or wait for a good movie. I would have loved to have seen Gravity, which is one of my favorite movies of the last year, in 3D. I believe the 3D effects on that are not overdone, and it really enhances the film. In fact, I was having a chat with Lance Harris, who writes our game and movie reviews, and he was raving about the 3D effects in that. He in fact saw it at an IMAX theater, I think somewhere in Europe. So I will make a trip. I live in Johannesburg, but I'll go back there to watch an IMAX movie if it's a good movie.
Now tell me, was the screen curved, or is it?
It was curved. Yeah,
because that's one of the things when I look at any 3D movie. Obviously, with the curved screen will add to this. But what I want out of that 3D experience is the depth more than in my face action.
Yeah,
I want to get some. Context within the image that I'm looking at.
There was a lot of that. Yeah, depth of field was incredible.
So there wasn't too much, but I mean, with an action movie, generally the stuff is moving so quickly. Mm. Where if you look at something like Gravity, because of this gradual movement that you have, it's a slower paced form.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the 3D effects in that creates a much better feel on the eyes when you look at it.
Yes, I agree. But the depth of field was incredible. I mean, the second half of the last third of the movie was all shot in Hong Kong. It went on far too long. I think they could have done with a 30-minute cut, but it was also shot in Hong Kong, and the sort of depth of field you got over the city from some of the angles was absolutely remarkable. Go check it out. It's pretty cool. And there's one coming to Joburg next year too. It's going to be on the East Rand, unfortunately, at Eastgate.
Mm.
But unfortunately for us, because we live on the northeastern side of the city, but northwestern rather side of the city. But it's very cool. $99 for a ticket, which I don't think is excessive. If you consider that a regular movie ticket, probably set you back 60 or 70 bucks. And if you're going to go one of these fancy theatres with the nice seating where they bring you dinner and stuff, you're gonna pay well over 100 rand.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think it's too excessive.
Especially for the screen side. I think it's still a very novel experience to enjoy a large screen movie.
Mm.
So the price is certainly not that bad.
No, I agree. So there we go. We might bring up e-tolls next week.
Yes.
Great. Well, our winner this week, I think it's an obvious one. We have to pick MTN and Pick and Pay for this very smart deal they've
done. Agreed.
It's going to have a big impact, I think, on the country broadly, on poor people getting into the financial system for the first time. So it's going to mean, I think, for the first time, real financial inclusion. So well done to those companies.
Yeah, agreed.
Our loser this week is nobody. We don't have one. Everyone can breathe easier. Let's move on to our last feature of the week, and that's our regular product or app pick of the week. What have you got this week, Rafa?
I've got a little Chrome plugin that I've been using for a while called Session Buddy. If I'm sure a lot of people out there would be using the web same way that I do, a million tabs open all the time because I'm flipping between so many bits of content or information that I'm tapping into or reading or just something to read later. Now, what Session Buddy does is it allows you to, with two clicks, save the current window or save multiple windows. And it just saves it neatly, tags it with a date, you can put in custom names, and it obviously saves it on the cloud, so I've got access to it on all my devices. And I really appreciate the fact that I can, save today's work,
and
go home, open up a fresh browser, continue with something else, and then tomorrow morning when I come back, literally pick off from where I started without losing any of those pages. Great handy app. I mean, it makes my productive life a lot easier, and I'll highly recommend it. Session Buddy for Chrome.
That sounds cool. I think I must check it out. Yeah, I've got the bad habit of opening tabs until I've opened so many tabs my computer crashes. Yeah.
And yeah, Photoshop too, and then that adds to the memory dump. So
yeah, I'd have so many tabs in Photoshop too. That's true. Cool. Anyway, my pick this week is actually a product for a change, and I went to the launch last night and have a review unit here already, and it's I should say it's my pick this week, but I guess it's also a pick on in some respects. It's a beautifully designed phone. It's the new Huawei Ascend P7, the follow-up to the P6 last year, which was a bit of a controversial product. It's absolutely stunning. It's certainly the thinnest smartphone I've ever seen. I think they actually do claim it as the thinnest smartphone in the world, although I stand to be corrected there. But it's really, really beautifully designed. Absolutely thin, gorgeous 5-inch 1080p display. It's got a fantastic, they say it's a phone to take, wait for it, groofies or group selfies.
I know.
There was a collective sigh of groan at the presentation when that was announced last week, but I suppose they decided that groupies was probably worse. So it's got an 8 megapixel front facing camera.
Wow.
And I've taken a couple of shots with it just to test it, not because I'm a big selfie addict.
Are you sure?
And the quality is just amazing. I think that people who do take a lot of selfies should seriously give this phone some thought. I've just opened it up here for Rechard to have a look at the screen with the front-facing camera, and the quality really is astounding.
Yeah,
we're sitting in a fairly dark room here, and it's
Very crisp.
Yeah, it's the picture quality is astonishing, and it's a very wide angle as well. So
it is. I mean,
so you can it's really great. And I tend to take pictures. When I do take a selfie, I tend to use on my Galaxy S4, I tend to turn the phone around and then sort of try and figure out where the button, the soft button is. And then I usually take a picture with someone with their head chopped off or something. I think that Huawei is really setting the pace here with this device, and hopefully other vendors are going to pick up on the trend. It's a really cool device. It's not absolutely high end. It's they haven't put the fastest processor in or the most RAM. It's got 2 gigs of RAM. I think it's a 2.5 gigahertz processor, if I'm not mistaken. No, it may even be a bit slower than that. It's got a 2,500 milliamp hour battery, so it's also not the world's greatest battery. So you're probably not going to get a massive battery life out of it. Although after today, it's 5 p.m. Now, and as we're recording this, and it's still on 53% after a moderate day of use.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad. My pick on regarding this device is that it's really a bit of an Apple knockoff. In some respects, such as the sort of aluminium sidings of it, it's very clearly been, let's say, influenced by Apple.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you look at the home screen, they haven't got an app drawer. It's very much the iPhone icon-based approach, although you of course get Android widgets as well, but there's no app drawer, and it's very many of the design styles that they've gone for. For example, if you drag up from the bottom of the screen, you get a bunch of options: calendar, calculator, flashlight, and mirror. The icons are clearly cribbed from Apple's iOS 7. In some respects, Huawei has done a fantastic job with this device, and it's a really nice phone at a reasonable price. I think it's about 6,500 rand now, and it'll come down over time. But in other respects, how about some originality, guys? bit too much borrowed from Apple, I guess.
Yeah, it is a nice looking device. So you have to give them credit.
It is beautiful, and it's for me, it's got the right size screen. The iPhone is too small. Although apparently that's going to be rectified with the iPhone 6. Yes. It's got a beautiful 5-inch display. It is light. And it's super thin, and it's going to get noticed if you put it down on a table in a restaurant. Anyway, that's the Huawei Ascend P7. Cool, Rechot, I think that's all the time we have for this week. It's definitely all the time we have for this week. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can mail us at info@techcentral.co.za. From Rechot and myself, until next time, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.